You're listening to Beer Talk Today with your hosts Kyle Brown, Matt Lang, and John Nadler.
That's right, everybody. It is Beer Talk Today here on this lovely Tuesday evening. We just enjoyed a lovely sunset here at the studio, Kyle pointed out.
It was beautiful.
It was beautiful. Yeah. And we have a very special guest in the studio with us tonight we're going to be talking to in a little bit. Nick Quint from Yahara Bay Distilleries. And I know what you all might be thinking. This is Beer Talk Today. Why are you talking to a distiller? Well, I mean, we have a more wide range of interests than just beer. Give us some credit.
We talk about wine sometimes.
Very rarely. we've been noticing that a lot of breweries, some of our favorite breweries, have started putting in distilleries. And partially because of that and because of sort of our own interest in it, we decided to focus a show on that subject. And there are quite a few microbreweries, Rogue, Dogfish Head, Anchor, New Holland, several others who have decided to, over the past few years, move into distilling. And I just wanted to read a quick quote I found. There's a New York Times article from about 2007 that talked a little bit about this sort of new trend emerging of these small distilleries popping up all over the country. It actually focused a lot on the Midwest in particular. And see if this sounds familiar to people who followed a craft beer. It says, though there is no precise definition for what the industry refers to as artisanal or craft distilleries, experts say they are distinguished from the mass distillers by their small scale, their use of local and often organic ingredients, and the experimental quality of some of their products. Sounds pretty similar to craft beer to me.
Almost identical
description. But anyway, because of that, we decided to have Yahara Bay Distiller. What is your title, I guess? Owner? Distiller? Master distiller? Something like
owner,
that?
Owner, president, janitor, sales manager. We're pretty much a family business, so depending on what needs to be done, so it gets done.
Excellent.
Which I would say is another common similarity with any brewmaster we've talked to. Jack of all trades. I mean, you're brewing 1 minute and trying to think who it was.
Mopping the next.
Yeah, it was someone said, like, I was one brewmaster. It might have been a grumpy troll. He said, I was brewing 1 hour and the next minute I was fixing a clogged toilet or something. You know, you're just like, you're doing everything you got to do to keep it going.
That sounds like Mark at the grumpy troll.
Yeah, that sounds about right. But as Jack of all trades, Nick Quint is here, and thanks for joining us on the show.
Yeah, so first and foremost, I just want to know, Yahara Bay, what's the name? Are you located on a bay?
No.
Or another body of water?
When I was trying to come up with a name for the business, I looked around. You know, the Yahara River connects the Madison chain of lakes. And I realized there really, to my knowledge, isn't a Yahara Bay. And I thought that would be kind of a cool name for an artisan distillery and for rum and things like that.
It's kind of a tropical kind of vibe,
Yahara Bay came to life. So we have our distilleries located near a little county park with a pond about, the, if you ran real hard and jumped over. I call that the bay.
The bay, all right. So how do you get started distilling?
That's a tough one for me to answer. About 2.5 years ago, we visited my cousin in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, that I hadn't seen for about 20 years. And I knew he had a winery. While I was there, I noticed he had this little copper distiller cranking over in the corner. And I got looking at that and talking to him about that and understood what he was doing and realized that that would really be something that would be fun to do in Madison. Kind of studied it, talked about it. And I didn't know anything about distilling. And, came to the conclusion it's one of those things that if I didn't do it, I would, to my dying day, wonder what might have happened. So basically took retirement funds and promises from the bank and everything else, and we went for it. We went to a seminar in Louisville that the Distillers Institute put on. We looked around a little bit and made the decision to do it, and actually, about 2 years ago this month, we made the decision. And, a lot of distillers take a couple years just to get their permits. 2 years ago this month, we made the decision. We got the permits in 6 months. And, we've been on the shelf now about a year and a half. So kind of moved right along.
Wow.
And the real learning curve. I mean, there was still learning every day.
Okay. So what volumes are we talking here? What are you, the size of your
operation? We're still, you know, the biggest problem with everybody in this industry is marketing. Phenomenal amount of competition, and you know the big distillers have millions of dollars to throw at the public. We don't, so we have to rely heavily on word of mouth, local support, fantastic products. So, and the other decision we made at the time was to do some they call it contract distilling. But for example, we distill the Desk Doors products. There's a couple other smaller companies that we're making product for, some going south to help kind of pay the bills. So, you know, if you put them all together, we're shipping out probably about 200 to 300 cases a month of our own product line, 50 to 100.
Okay.
Which we're still trying to get higher, but you know, it just takes a lot of time.
Mm-hmm. So I know how to brew beer. How do you distill? And can I do it in my living room? Because I've been making beer out of my kitchen living room, and it's been going okay, but I have a feeling this might be a little bit different.
Yeah, you could distill in your living room. It can be a little dangerous, and sometimes the alcohol and tobacco people take a keen interest in you more when you do that. Distilling is, it's funny. Breweries, wineries, distilleries, although our end result is an alcoholic beverage, there's different terminologies, different procedures, different everything. A winery will take a fruit and ferment it and make wine. A brewery will take grain and make beer. A distillery takes either that wine or that beer and takes it to the next step. So we have a still that I ordered from Germany. It's handmade by a company there, Christian Carl Company. They've been making stills for 150 years, and told them what I wanted to do, and then they built it to my specifications. And it has what's called a rectification column on it, but essentially to distill, just give you an example, we got grape juice that came in from Michigan, fermented it, and basically made wine in tanks. And then we start, it's a 90-gallon still. So we pump that 90 gallons at a time into the still, distill it. It takes about to a 90-gallon batch. At first, it's called stripping, but you just distill it as fast as you can just to get the alcohol out. And that takes, 90 gallons takes about 3 hours. Then you're going to, depending on the alcohol percentage, you might only get 8 or 9 gallons. So you keep doing that till you get 40 or 50 gallons of what at that point would be pretty rough alcohol at about 130, 140 proof. Then you run it through again, and it's called fractioning. And at this point, you separate what's called the heads and the tails from the hearts, the good alcohol. The heads there's a lot of chemicals in that early boil off, and about 10% is that. It makes good window cleaner.
No.
If you really, you know, superior headaches and hangovers from vodka, for example, this has a lot to do with it. I got an email from a woman that complimented me on our vodka. She said she drank a half a bottle and had no headache. I have a feeling that maybe she was still feeling the effects of the half a bottle the next morning yet, but a lot of people have commented on that. So in the distilling process, you get the heads off, then you have the hearts, which is about 80% the good, and then the last about 10% is called tails. And the heads there, now you've got that, which would be brandy if you're making it from grapes, but that 80% is now at about 170 proof or 160 proof. You can bring it out whatever you want it at. And at that point, then it would go into a barrel, and you go from there. Every spirit starts out as a clear spirit. And the government tells us, you know, if you do it this way, here's the only thing it can be. If you're going to change that, then you can't call it this. You know, if you're making alcohol spirits from a fruit, then it's going to be a brandy.
Okay.
So do you go from there? So the process, the key to it, though, is how to run that still, when to make those head and tail cuts. We just stand there, and it's done by taste, smell. Yeah, you just keep cutting it till you get it, and that's the artisan part. Everybody does it a little different.
And so when then, most brandy and stuff is usually around like 80 proof or so, I think. So you said when it goes in the barrels, it's like 140, 160. Right. When does that drop down?
We barrel age it. We don't use any coloring or anything. So we barrel age to get our color and to get the flavor we want. So when we decide, okay, it's ready to bottle that, then we move it from that barrel to another tank. And then I've got an RO unit, reverse osmosis. We purify the water, and then we start cutting that down to the proof we want.
Okay, so it's just water.
Right, just okay. Diluted.
Interesting. Okay, I didn't know that.
Mm. And then, you know, every time you're doing that, the government, you know, you're gauging all along to make sure you hit.
You got a certain amount?
You're allowed about a tenth of a percent off on your gauging.
Really?
A tenth of a percent?
I found that out.
A tenth of a percent off.
The hard way.
Now, I would even say, I can't imagine it's that strict on beer.
No way.
Which is an interesting, I mean, yeah, in,
I'm sure it's not.
In relativity, beer is not anywhere close to spirits.
Huh, interesting.
But,
I mean, we use hydrometers, and, you know, I thought I was very accurate, but then our federal investigator sent one in, and it came back. It's supposed to be 90 proof. It was 90.2. So I ended up paying tax on 0.2. You know, it came out to like $6 and some cents.
So you had to pay back taxes. But see, if Kettle One did that, that would be, you know, tens of thousands of dollars they'd be missing out on. Wow. So they got to make sure. Yeah. Yikes.
And so you said barrel aging will actually add color. I mean, if you don't do any color, are you able to get it to the same colors that we'll see in a market?
Not necessarily, but I'll get it there naturally. A lot of people use caramel coloring,
okay,
to get that. And it'll always say on the bottle, if it says, colored with caramel or flavorings and things like that, that means, you know, it's been doctored. And mm-hmm. We're trying to stay true to the artisan part of this, local ingredients as much as possible, green as we can. I mean, our apple brandy, for example, the apples come from Kickapoo Orchard and Gaze Mills, specifically Honeycrisp apples. You know, we barrel age, no chemicals or anything. So, you know, sometimes it has to stay in there a long time. But rum, I mean, we have a very good rum, but it's clear. But a lot of people think rum should be dark. So we also have some rum in a barrel right now, mm-hmm, aging. Unfortunately, all of the artisan distillers, I shouldn't say all, but the vast majority, in order to pay rent, come out first with the clear products, vodka, gin, rum, because they're the fastest to make, and you start creating a little cash flow while you're waiting for your dark products to age.
Mm-hmm.
So it's dollars and cents. I mean, some of the distillers are attached to other businesses that have been going on for years, so they're... They have time to wait. Mm-hmm. We don't.
What is the what's the realm of the spirits that you produce then?
We have vodka that we make from corn and little apple. We have gin that juniper berries are required, but I go down to the farmer's market and pick up a few other items that go in there. We have rum that's made, of course, with molasses, but we have a little Wisconsin sorghum in there too. Limoncello, which is fantastic product. It's basically an Italian product. You know, normally it's made in southern Italy. Here it's made in southern Wisconsin. I use lemons, Wisconsin lemons from California for that. Can't find any lemon trees in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
The apple brandy, which is my favorite. We just came out with a new product, an apple liqueur. It's called Holz's Apple Crisp. It's named after Jim Holz, the guy that came to me with his family recipe. And it's really a good product. It's just a low alcohol liqueur. We have rum in barrels. We have whiskey in barrels. I'm really looking forward to the whiskey. We have brandy in barrels. And a few, you know, time is really the most important. I mean, we want to play this fall with a rutabaga vodka that a woman, really? emailed me last summer, the Raises Rutabagas, and she got me thinking, and I said, we have to try this. In Europe right now, they're making vodka with carrots.
Huh.
So.
Can be used anything, I guess.
We'll be trying everything.
So when you have your product, and as you said, it's hard to go against competition, especially, I would think it might even be harder than the beer market. I barely even knew that there was such thing as this big of a craft distillery market out there. How do you enter a market, and how do you handle distribution?
When we first started making product, the law in Wisconsin still allowed us to be our own distributor. So actually, my daughter, my stepdaughter, her boyfriend, and I went out on days off, went out selling. And we were actually pretty successful, the bars and liquor stores around the Madison area. Then the law changed, and fortunately for me at the time, the Miller beer distributor guys came knocking on my door, because I didn't know how to go find a distributor, and said, we would like to carry your products. So I jumped for that. So, and then, of course, then towards the end of last year, Miller and Coors merged. So the Miller distributor merged with Frank Beer and Frank Liquor, and they were happy to take over my product line. So currently in this area, Frank Liquor is the distributor. It's still difficult because, they handle a lot of different products. And if you're one of the salespeople and you make a call, if Kettle One is doing full-page ads and all this, everybody's buying Kettle One. Well, here we are. Mm-hmm. We don't have that full-page ad, so we have to go out. And what we do a lot of is tastings, go right into bars, provide tastings, and just it's one customer at a time is what it amounts to.
Right.
The customers we do have are very loyal. We just need a lot more of them.
And so you mentioned the laws have been changing and whatnot. What are the big laws that, I guess, would be the restrictions that really limit you from going out and doing what you want to do, and how have they been changing?
The state recently, we're going to get a law change that's going to help the three. There are three distillers in Wisconsin, and at this point, we cannot do sampling in a distillery, nor can we sell our products. We're really limited. But you can go to a brewery and you can go to a winery and sample and purchase their products if you want to. Within the next 60 days, we hope and we think that the law will get changed in Wisconsin, allowing us to do the same thing. And that really opens the door a lot to tours and tastings. And, people will be able to find products that they never knew existed. We have a lot of great products we might have a half a barrel of, which isn't really enough to bottle and put out into the market. But, they're phenomenal products for somebody that enjoys a fantastic whiskey or something like that. We'll be able to now provide that. Until this time, we couldn't. Federal laws are federal laws. They're very restrictive, a lot of detail, tremendous amount of record keeping, which I dislike immensely, but that's the way that goes. So, got to play by the rules.
And then for legislation and laws and regulations, I guess, how does that compare for you as a small craft distillery as opposed to the big boys out there?
It's the same laws, same regulations. So whatever they do, we have to do, and vice versa. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's kind of, this past winter was horrible for us. Our investigator decided, since we were making wine to distill, that we had to be a winery. Which didn't make any sense to me, because we could ferment beer or grain and make beer to distill, but we didn't have to be a brewery. But he just said, hey, this is the rules. So we basically spent all winter with him here, going through the whole permitting process again, just for a 15 by 15 foot section in our distillery to be a winery. And this went on, and more bonds and all this stuff. And finally, we had a whiskey tasting here in February in Madison. And I talked to a couple of the other distillers from other states and asked them if they had to be a winery. They were making brandy, too, and they said no. So I emailed the investigator back and said, "How come? Is there something special about us in Wisconsin here that we are the only ones that have to be a winery?" Well, that email made its way all the way to Washington, D.C.
Wow.
And legal counsel for the alcohol people said, "You don't have to be a winery."
That's good.
So I got a few phone calls of apology, but it was financially a real setback because basically we were stopped.
Yikes.
And he said, "Okay, you can go ahead now."